Folks, time to talk some football. Turns out he was just here last week. And along with Roxy Bernstein and Lewis Johnson, one of the top broadcast crews anywhere, they'll be here again. Follow along on Twitter. The handle's at Big Ann Heron. Anthony, welcome back to Eugene. How are things with you, sir?
Steve, things are sensational at this point. I won't lie, it wasn't a strong start when I landed at the airport in Eugene yesterday. We had a few issues where the luggage didn't arrive, and then I was given a rental car with no air conditioning, and then I just felt like, you know, the pampered former athlete slash broadcaster, because now I'm just complaining everywhere. Wait a minute, what are we doing here? I got to have AC. I got to have my suits and my ties and my luggage. So finally, I got a vehicle with AC. My suits are here. So all is right with the world.
You know, when we were an ESPN affiliate and we had one of their guys on, Desmond Howard, who went to Michigan, and they lost his luggage. And I asked him, I go, would that be a Buckeye or a Notre Dame fan who did that? So for you, having gone to Iowa, is that a Nebraska fan who would have lost your luggage?
It would either be a Nebraska fan or an Iowa State fan. In this particular week, it's more likely an Iowa State fan because Iowa and Iowa State are playing each other tomorrow, and that's the big in-state rivalry where, you know, Nebraska historically is a much better program than Iowa State, obviously, and they've got the matchup annually now. They do around Thanksgiving weekend towards the end of November, and they call it Farmageddon, where Nebraska and Iowa play each other, and it's that Friday before Thanksgiving every year. But since it's Iowa State, it's the Cyclone versus the Hawkeyes. They play for the Cy-Hawk Trophy, so it was very likely an Iowa State fan who lost my luggage.
All right, I was suspicious. So now you've got a new gig beyond the Pac-12 and 670 The Score in Chicago. What are you doing with the Bears?
I'm actually going to be on the Bears postgame show every Sunday. So my travel schedule will bring me back to Chicago every week as it normally does. But once I land, as opposed to just getting to go lounge on my couch and just watch football all day on Sundays, now I'm actually going to be going home, kiss my wife and our 11-month-old son really briefly, and then I'll go over to the TV station and start prepping for my TV duties to do the postgame show every week with the Chicago Bears. Now, this week one of the NFL season, this Sunday, I'm going to leave Austin tomorrow, a little while after we get off the air. I'll probably go on some Ant Bites somewhere briefly, and then head to Portland. So I'll take my two-hour drive to Portland. I'll fly overnight. I land in Chicago sometime Sunday morning, but then since the Bears are playing the Packers on Sunday Night Football, I'll have plenty of time on Sunday to sort of rest and relax and recharge before I have to go over to the TV station for my Bears duties.
That's awesome. And obviously with the Bears right now getting Khalil Mack, I mean, the first round pick was Roquan Smith. They got Akeem Hicks. We know the history of the linebackers from Butkus to Singletary and Wilbur Marshall to Urlacher. How pumped are the fans you're hearing from about what this defense might be?
Oh, they're ecstatic. I mean, this is as excited as the city of Chicago has been about the Bears in years. I mean, there was a level of excitement when the Bears first signed Jay Cutler. You know, folks didn't know exactly that he was going to plateau so quickly after he got to Chicago. So there was a level of fervor when they got Jay Cutler in the trade with the Denver Broncos. But it wasn't like this, because now you do have a coach that people are very excited about with a roster that has a general manager in Ryan Pace, who initially in his first few years running the Bears didn't seem to be operating on all cylinders. He was in this awkward space of having some veteran talent and having a coach who he hadn't hired and trying to figure out, all right, how do I keep this roster in a position to have a shot to win? And then after a couple of years, he and the brass above him decided it's not time to try to win with this crew anymore. We got to move on. So they rebuilt the roster, got really young, got far more athletic, far more fiscally sound as far as their ability to spend some cap space. And now they brought in a coach in Matt Nagy, who was one of the hottest coaching commodities in the NFL this last year. So very quickly, we've seen Ryan Pace in Chicago improve on the job and add, you know, some Oregon type of talent. You know, it was a bit odd. I was tweeting about it yesterday to be flying from Chicago coming out here to Eugene. And while I was preparing for the Portland State at Oregon broadcast and going through those notes at the same time, I'm simultaneously listening to Mark Helfrich at the podium in Chicago as the Bears offensive coordinator. So it did feel a bit ironic while I was doing that multitasking.
Yeah, you almost have to check your geography for a moment. Talking football with Anthony Herron of the Pac-12 Network. So having seen firsthand last week's Bowling Green game, a little sluggish early, especially on defense. Was it the Falcons throwing some new wrinkles in, opening game jitters? What did you make, I guess, of that first quarter when BGSU kind of built that 10-0 lead before Oregon cranked it up?
Well, it was a little of both, and some of the Oregon players and coaches were actually readily willing to admit that there were some jitters in that opening game. You know, we were talking to Shane Lemieux about that a bit just a little while ago here over at the facility. That, of course, they're, you know, starting offensive guard, and he started almost 30 games at this point in his career, and so there's not many guys on the roster right now who played more football or more snaps for the Oregon Ducks. But he said, you know, just something about that season opening game, first time in a long time taking the field at Austin and feeling the energy from the crowd. He described it as not necessarily being nervous, but he said it was anxious. You know, and he felt like he and his teammates were just a bit anxious early in the game, wanting to do well, being excited about the season starting. And then, quite frankly, Bowling Green does have some players who can make some plays. They had a very effective quarterback. They had a running back who could play at the Power 5 level. I do think that both of those players offensively were very impressive. And Oregon just wasn't really playing at the level at the start of the game as they were by the time we got to the latter stages of the first quarter and into the second quarter. So there's going to be some of that potential tomorrow from Portland State. They're just not quite as equipped as Bowling Green. Now, I think Bowling Green is going to end up by the end of the season being a dangerous team in the MAC. And I think Portland State by the end of this season is going to be a dangerous team in the Big Sky, but they don't have the level of playmaker at their disposal that Bowling Green does. And I do anticipate, you know, with the emphasis that Oregon has put this week on starting fast, on catching the ball cleanly, on hitting blocks defensively right from jump, some of those things that they struggled with early in the game, I do think it's going to be a matchup that I anticipate Oregon should control earlier than what we saw last week.
You know, I've been here since 1990. I've seen a lot of Ducks. I'm just a huge Troy Dye fan. I mean, he stepped on the field as a true freshman and is just natural leader, crazy good athlete. I know he dropped one pick in the gut, and then he made an unbelievable interception, getting both feet in. So you've seen him live each of his three seasons already. I mean, how special of a player is he?
Sensational, and part of the reason why is because not only is he just a purely spectacular and explosive athlete, but he's also a guy who's versatile with the way he can play football, because a lot of times you'll see these guys who, you know, they're really fast and really explosive, and so you have to put them on very specific assignments. Like, this guy had to just sort of be a heat-seeking missile, or this guy had to come off the edge, or this guy is great in coverage. We got to make sure we keep him dropping as deep as possible. You know, Troy Dye is super versatile. You know, he's a guy who was a safety in high school, and he's got the ability to be effective in pass coverage, backpedaling, and going sideline to sideline. He's a sure tackler. But as we saw during his true freshman season where he was an outside linebacker, he can also rush the edge. And he's a guy who can penetrate into the backfield. He can play on the opposing side of the line of scrimmage. And now the first 2 years he's ever played inside linebacker, I mean, you know, think about it, this was the season opener of the second year he's ever played middle linebacker before. And I saw him making adjustments on the fly. And I referenced this a bit on the Pac-12 Network during the broadcast, where early in the game, we were seeing Troy Dye allowing offensive linemen to advance on him a bit. And some of the schemes that Bowling Green ran had something to do with that, where they were, you know, doing some things where they were leading the tight end and folding some blocks where they could have some lead blockers coming at angles that Troy Dye and the defensive front, the linebackers, the interior of Oregon's defense weren't quite expecting. But as the game got going, they did a nice job getting the defensive line on the move a little bit. But then most importantly, Troy Dye was able to make an adjustment during the game where he started meeting those blocks downhill, playing at the line of scrimmage, sort of blitzing his fist is the term I like to use for it. And so for him to be able to think the game, process it at such a high level for a guy who hasn't been playing Mike linebacker very long, the mental aspect of what he's able to do on the field only enhances his just supreme physical abilities.
Yeah, stronger as the game got longer, one of my partners told me. Couple of final thoughts for Pac-12 analyst Anthony Herron. I know it's a popular subject, but the quarterback is Justin Herbert, thrown in early as a freshman, missed half of last year, injured. And, of course, you know, he's a local young guy. I just like his demeanor. And, oh, yeah, now he's now 6'6", about 235. From when you first saw him against Stanford in 2016 through now, kind of what strikes you about where he is as the Duck quarterback?
His demeanor. I mean, because the, you know, I called him last season, I used the term colossus, just because you could see him starting to grow into his body more, being 6'6 and 230 plus. Now, like you mentioned, up to 235. So he's certainly built like a dynamo as a quarterback. But in watching his growth over the years, what he's grown more so has been the mental, the emotional aspect of it, the intangibles of the way he's kind of the driving force, not just for the offense, but for the team in general, and to see the way the players are now responding to him. And he's not, you know, the most forceful, the most fiery guy. He's not one of these Baker Mayfield types of personalities, as you know, Steve, but you do see moments. I mean, even with, you know, some of the little nuanced things with running the pistol for the first time, where last week, you know, we saw where running backs stepped in the wrong direction a few times, or he's looking for the mesh point on one side and they step to the other side, or they trip over each other a little bit here and there. And you did see him sort of urging some of those younger teammates on a bit. And as the game was starting slow, you know, Shane Lemieux talked to us about this a bit today, where it was Justin Herbert who was one of the driving forces on the sideline and in the huddle, urging the teammates to really get going. And that's just somewhere that he wasn't at in his confidence and in his emotional acumen. He wasn't there a couple of years ago to be the one who could lead a resurgence like that. He could be a part of it, and he could certainly make plays. Now he's at a point in his development emotionally where he's able to lead a surge with this team emotionally. And that's just such a big step. And you just saw Marcus Mariota start to make that step and have that growth throughout his career. That's a huge leap for a quarterback who's more mild-mannered in his demeanor to be able to make. And so it's been fun to watch as Justin Herbert started to grow with his demeanor and a bit of his bravado that he's able to ooze through his teammates. You know, like I said, it's not a Baker Mayfield thing, but there's more swag there than there used to be.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to plant any flags. One final thought. The new head coach, Coach Cristobal, year two with the program, came here from Bama. I just get something from him. Maybe it's that swagger for being a great player at Miami to his role in the success of the Crimson Tide. What kind of strikes you about him as the coach of this program and what he's capable of here?
He's so, well, I'll say this for starters. I called a couple of his games years ago when he was at FIU. He was at Florida International at a time where they had become one of the laughing stocks of college football. Folks were trying to figure out if the program should even exist anymore, and they were brawling on the field the year before he got there, and it became this big national scandal. He came in and took the program over, and I called a couple of his games back then, and I was struck by the level of care and concern and passion he had for his first head coaching opportunity back then. And for me, my personal observation is where I've seen him grow over, you know, what's been almost a decade at this point since the first time I was around him as a head coach at least. Now I see that same level of care and compassion, but he's been around so many big-time coaches, and his mind, and I'm sure you've noticed this over the last couple of years in being around him, Steve, his mind works almost like a microprocessor where he can consume and retain so much information, and he's extremely organized and diligent with the way he operates day in and day out. You know, he's got his week planned out to the minute, literally to the minute, getting from A to B to C. And you see that in the way, like one example would be that, you know, he brought officials in throughout the offseason, where last year they were the most penalized team in college football. He had officials out on the practice field on a consistent basis. You know, he saw a problem, he saw something that needed to be addressed. And he didn't just, you know, say, hey, stop picking up flags. He found a specific way to teach it, to tactically improve his team in that situation from the game last week with the drop passes. He didn't just go out on the practice field and yell, catch the ball. Tactically, he and his position coaches, you know, thought through the details, the eyes, the hand placement, when you're whipping your eyes around, how your hips are placed, what's the route combination, and what point you're looking for the ball. And they talked through and tactically went through the details of the techniques of where some receivers were maybe in an uncomfortable body position and trying to make certain catches. He's just a very detail-oriented coach, and it's been cool to see that, because you could see it last year, being around him as a coordinator, interviewing him before games. And I would tell our crews last year, you know, while I certainly had no idea Willie Taggart was going anywhere, but I would tell our crews after we get down to interviewing Mario Cristobal, the offensive coordinator, you know what? Mario was an impressive young coach before. He's ready to have the big whistle again right now. You just watch him wait. Now, I had no idea it was going to come a few months later, and it did, and he certainly seems ready for the moment.
Well, I'm going to ask him if he, in fact, has a Pentium 6 processor in his brain. Folks, he's Anthony Herron. He'll be beyond the mic with Roxy once again on the Pac-12 Network for tomorrow's game. Keep up with all he's up to on Twitter. Use the handle at Big Ant Herron. Anthony, always appreciate your time, your tremendous insight. Thanks a lot, my friend, and I look forward to saying hi tomorrow.
Yeah, let's definitely do that, Steve. It's going to be another fun day at Austin Stadium where, as you know better than me, it never rains.
Good one, Anthony. Appreciate your time, man. Have a good one.
All right, see you tomorrow, Steve.
All right, take it easy.